Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Could home rule create a better learning environment for students in the Dallas Independent School District? A privately funded nonprofit group called Support Our Public Schools says it recently collected about 48,000 signatures on a petition to explore making Dallas the first ever home rule district in Texas. They hope to put an actual home rule proposal on the November ballot following the appointment of a commission to propose a new charter for the district. Supporters say that would give DISD greater flexibility than it has under current state and federal mandates, including the option for more freedom in hiring and managing employees and the ability to extend the number of days and hours students attend school. Critics say some of the ideas for change could be implemented without making Dallas the first ever home rule district in Texas, and they worry the effort could remove control of the district from the hands of an elected school board. Joining us to talk about the facts of the home rule charter effort are three journalists with long experience covering DISD. Tonnell Hobbs and Matthew Haig report and blog on education for the Dallas Morning News. Bill Zeeble covers education for KERA. Welcome all of you to Think.
Hi.
Thank you for having us.
Okay, let's start at the very beginning. What exactly is a home rule charter, and how did it become an option for school districts in Texas?
Tonnell, you're sitting with the rules
in
front of you.
You've got the law memorized, so we'll go.
Basically, a home rule charter, it's almost similar to a city charter, and the author of the bill, he actually told me that that's kind of what they were looking at. So what it is you have this charter, and that pretty much determines how your school district will be operated and governed. And it allows you to, you know, bypass certain state rules so that you can kind of operate on what the people have voted on, how they want to operate the school system.
So we love to do things our own way in Texas. Why has no school district ever even attempted this so far?
It's hard.
It's hard to get it done.
It's hard to get it done. You need Just to pass the first few barriers, you need to collect signatures, which amounts to, 5%?
Right, 24,600.
Of those registered there. Then it goes to a commission approving those signatures are approved and counted correctly and properly. Then you appoint a 15-member commission. Then that commission has up to a year?
They have up to a year, yeah.
They have 30 days to form the commission. They have up to a year to write this new plan. Then when it finally, if and when it finally goes to the voters, which means the education commissioner has to say okay on it after he or she has seen it, 25% of the voters at the election where this thing comes up have to at least show up to the polls. Doesn't matter how they vote. Like, everybody could vote against it. Everybody could vote for it. But if you don't have at least 25% turnout at that election, then everything is moot. It doesn't matter anyway. And you only get a few elections in a few years that sometimes get 25% turnout. The election, the runoff election yesterday, for example, seemed to get under 5%. And the March election, for example, didn't do very well either. So pick your election. I mean, there are many in a year in Texas.
Well, that's why they want to go in November, Support Our Public Schools, because it's that governor race and they expect to meet that threshold. Now, the author of the bill, Bill Ratliff, he actually really didn't want the 25% minimum requirement in there. But just to get the bill passed, that was something that he had to agree to because the other legislators, they didn't want just a small group of people coming in making such a drastic change. They wanted a big portion of the voters to help decide. So there you go with the minimum 25%. And he does believe that that minimum 25% rule has kept other districts from trying this out.
Okay, how did Support Our Public Schools collect those 48,000 signatures, and what's the verification process?
So Support Our Public Schools started, I believe, the first week of March with a petition drive. They hired people to go out to, I believe it was an election day, primaries, and met voters at polls. And they had to get registered voters within Dallas ISD, and they need 5%, 24,000. So they hired a bunch of people to volunteer. Well, they got paid per signature that they got.
And how much did they get paid per signature?
We heard it went from $1 to
$4. It went from $1, and then it increased as time went on because they're under a big time crunch to make that November election. Mm-hmm. So people started, they paid them more.
And other incentives such as flights if they got the most in a day or a week. Yeah. And so they spent 10 weeks getting signatures and went south of the Trinity, north of the Trinity. And they were proud to say when they eventually got 48,000 that half the signatures came from the southern sector of Dallas. So they spent day and night collecting these signatures, going door to door, outside shopping centers, libraries, you name it, to get these signatures.
So essentially when people signed this, what they were really communicating was, let's explore this thing, which is what this commission will do. How does the commission get appointed, and what specifically is it charged with producing?
The 15 members comprise the commission. 11 are appointed by the 9 trustees, the 9 school board members. 4 are teachers from a DISD committee or council. I forget the exact name.
Yeah, the council. They appoint the
teachers.
4, right.
And, for example, Rena Honey, who's the president of the Teacher Organization Alliance, AFT, which is the largest teacher representative group, she's on that group. She's on the committee. And so therein come the 15. They supposedly reflect the demographics of the district. Most of them, a majority, have to be parents with kids in the district. But one question I'm not sure about is, how is that demographic reflected? The majority of students, does it reflect the demographic of the DISD voters, or does it reflect the demographic of the student population? And that, when I talked to members
of— very different things.
Two different things. When I talked to members of Support Our Public Schools, they couldn't answer that one either.
My understanding, after the school board got a briefing the other day, they hired this attorney, a former general counsel for the Texas Education Agency, and he said it has to represent the voters within Dallas ISD.
That's logical.
There was one trustee, Miguel Solis, who was trying to make an argument that it should reflect perhaps future population demographics, one that would be more predominantly Hispanic. But they said, no, it should reflect the voters. The amazing thing about this law, one of the many amazing things, as Bill mentioned, the 15 members, they have to represent, you know, the DISD to some extent. But that's about all it says. It's pretty vague when it comes to the process of whether each trustee gets to appoint one person, whether they have to vote on it as one big body, you name it. DISD is going on new ground that no school district or trustees have had to encounter before.
Well, and the author of the bill said that he feels that it should be the school board that sets those guidelines on the process they will use. And he also said maybe the school board would want some parameters for this commission. Will they have a president over the commission? What constitutes a quorum?
Good question. Right.
These are still left unresolved.
Right. And that's the thing. I mean, the law does have some vague areas, and it's because local control is what the author was thinking.
I mean, you're coming up with a new form of governance, and the terms that dictate that governance have yet to be determined as well.
Right.
That's the curious part.
And it's important to note that the trustees, back to your original question about how they verified it, the Dallas ISD, with help from the elections office here in Dallas County, had some software that would look at names on the petition, compare it to a database of registered voters. They did that, took 5 days, and they had to throw out or at least question about 21,000 of those 48,000 signatures.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. Not all of them were technically thrown out. If they had to go back to check them, they would have, and maybe some of them would have stayed because of address changes and whatnot. But they still got the required amount. And once that was turned in to the trustees last Thursday, this 30-day clock starts, which is in this 1995 law, that the school board has 30 days to come up with a process of how to name these commissioners and then also appoint them. And so that date would be June 21st that this deadline is that they have to name them.
It's making my heart race just to think about this. And we should keep in mind that the school board has the responsibility of deciding the parameters of how this commission will operate. A number of members of the school board have openly said they don't like the idea of doing this at all. Are they allowed to drag their feet and let the clock run out, or are they required by law to get this done?
Now, the law does require them to appoint this commission in 30 days. The law does not say what happens if they don't. So, you know, and it sounds like they're really trying to meet this deadline. I know they're meeting tomorrow just to discuss, you know, to agree on what process they will use to make these appointments. But the law really doesn't say what happens. It doesn't say, you know, the Texas Education Commissioner will get that right if the board doesn't meet the timeline. So, you know, that would be interesting to see what would happen if they didn't meet it. But I think they are determined to meet that deadline. So we'll see.
And the board's taking it seriously.
Right.
I mean, they've been talking about, I mean, going way back, they said, we need to obey the law. We need to hire an attorney. They had meetings about that. They okayed it. I mean, they're proceeding with the idea that we're going to follow all the rules and we're going to obey the law and we're going to do the best we can, as opposed to dragging your heels right. and trying to stop it at every point.
And there's the application process now. If you want to apply to be on
right.
the commission, you could do that on the Dallas IC website.
So they can't drag their feet on this 30-day thing. I mean, it's in law that they have to do it. But they have sort of revealed their long-term strategy with trustees like Nancy Bingham and others saying, well, once we start this commission, they should take their time in reviewing the education yeah. code, how the district operates, how it might be governed. And that's a way to prevent the charter, if one is created on this commission, from ever getting on that November election. Because another deadline that this group faces, like Support Our Public Schools, if they want it on the November ballot, that has to be delivered to the county by August 18th. So you can see they have this very short window, especially in July when a lot of DISD people are gone. How are they going to, you know, consult with DISD employees and lawyers about how things might change?
Right.
So you already have trustees saying, once we appoint these people, we want ones who take sort of a long-term view. And this commission has up to a year to write something.
So supporters of this and Support Our Public Schools wants to get it on the November ballot, which gives them a de facto August deadline. But as you mentioned earlier, the law itself actually gives them a year to complete this whole thing.
Right.
The commission.
Right? I mean, when you think about it, if you add up, the trustees get 30 days to form the commission. Once the commission meets and they form the charter, charter goes to the education commissioner in Austin. He gets 30 days with it. Realistically, this commission might just have a little over a month to put this charter together if you get the education commissioner, if he takes his 30 days and the school board takes their 30 days to appoint. And it has to be on the ballot, what is it, August 18th.
Right.
So there's not a lot of time to get this charter formed up.
Okay, so what could...
For the November election.
What could the charter change, and are those changes one-time only permanent changes, or does the existence of a charter leave things open for subsequent
change? That's exactly
it.
Okay. So if you get this charter passed, you can have amendments to it, which in those elections, a 20% turnout is requested. But, you know, I mean, that's still hefty, 20%. But once you get this charter out there, you can amend it. So they could come back and make amendments to it. Sort of like they do at city council, you know, how they go through their amendment process.
The law only stipulates what a charter, home rule charter district must still provide and follow, including federal laws, mm-hmm. high school graduation requirements, special ed. And so you can basically take that list and say, okay, we have to do this. Everything else that the district currently does or that's in the Texas Education Code, we can modify, ignore, do whatever. And so that's where they start. And so there's a lot that they can change, including curriculum if they want to, school start times. The state mandates that's now after a certain date in August. They can move it up to the beginning of August, much like a charter school does.
Number of years. I mean, number of days you
right.
must attend.
Mm-hmm.
All those things.
We're speaking this hour with education reporters Bill Zeeble of KERA, Anton L. Hobbs, and Matthew Haig of the Dallas Morning News about the home rule proposal for DISD. If you've got a question about this, we'd love to hear from you at 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org, or you can send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. You can learn to navigate the ever-changing digital landscape with the Social Media and Digital Communication Boot Camp, June 4th through 6th at SMU in Plano. Details and registration at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. As part of KERA's American Graduate Initiative, we're talking today about the Home Rule proposal for DISD. My guests are Matthew Haig of the Dallas Morning News, Tonnell Hobbs of the Dallas Morning News, and Bill Siebel of KERA. All three of them cover education. If you'd like to join us, call 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. So there are people who think this is an interesting idea to explore. There are people who are very nervous about the whole concept. But lots of people are asking about Support Our Public Schools. Did this organization exist in any form before the push for home rule came to DISD? And who are the individuals behind it?
Well,
go ahead.
I'll just say shortly, they formed technically in November with three members. They now have five board members. The three members got together after they apparently met with a trustee, Mike Morath, of the Dallas ISD School Board, who studies the Texas Education Code, knows a lot about it, and had come across this never-before-used law, part of called Chapter 12 of the Texas Education Code, informed people all over town, including these three people who ended up starting this group, about this law and the potential for it, and why don't we explore it or at least consider what it might be able to do for us. As Morath has told me, they took this idea and ran with it, and started this group as a 501c4, which means they could take some donations and collections and don't have to disclose much about it. In November, the group became public, I believe in mid-February, and then they launched their drive in early March.
Many people are concerned that there must be some kind of financial benefit to private enterprise if people are putting $1 to $4 per signature for 48,000 signatures, for example. Is there any evidence of that, or do we have any information about whether there would be a privatization, for example, of the Dallas Independent School District?
I don't see how that happens, even though there's private dollars behind it, because it doesn't privatize the district. I mean, there are several like fail-safe protectors, if you will. The board names commissioners whom we do not know. The commissioners come up with a charter, which we haven't seen. But it doesn't now say, okay, nothing says now we own it. You don't anymore. I mean, I know there are fears about the privatization of education, about the privatization of the assets of the school district on its $1.2 billion budget, but also with zillions of dollars worth of property and land and other assets, all that stuff stays within the district. And I don't see how it can change unless the Texas laws change over time or legislators say, if you're a charter school or a charter district, you can now do X, Y, and Z. Those fears have been mentioned to me as possibilities down the road. But still, I'm trying to figure out where the privatized fear comes from in a logical sense, and I can't connect the dots yet.
Yeah, part of the fear, I think, comes from there hasn't been much information provided on who the financial backers are. So people are wondering who's financing this, what is their motive, and I think that's part of the fear.
Another fear is that the word charter is in this, the Home Rule Charter right. District. And it's in, as I said, Chapter 12 of the Texas Education Code, which also happens to be the chapter that introduced charter schools, you know, traditional charter schools as we know them. And so there's fear that those charter schools, which can outsource and privatize to some extent, that the same possibility could happen in DISD. And we just don't know enough to know whether that would happen.
But the folks that support our public schools are trying to get this all considered. It doesn't sound like they have a great deal of influence over the commission itself, either the appointment of members of the commission or what the commission actually discusses.
Not legally. Mm-hmm. I mean, they may make a suggestion. They may have some so-called ulterior motive, but to each of them, when I've asked, to their face, they say, no, we don't. We just want to see a few changes to this district, which we think could help improve it, that isn't happening now. And And when you talk to these board members, their requests are few. So, you know, they're so minimalist as to make me think, you know, what else is going on? I don't see it. They don't talk about it. So what is it? I mean, the only requests they're saying is let's change the election date. Let's make the trustees more accountable. Those aren't hugely awful. And some
of certainly don't sound controversial.
Or controversial.
Yeah, but, you know, once you get the charter, you can come back and make
then
a
you
minute.
Can change right. it. And, right. and that's the fear.
Right.
And that's what they're saying a lot now, which is let's just get this passed, bare
right.
bones, no controversial things, and we can always amend it.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the phones. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We have Michael on the line in Colleyville. Hey, Michael.
Oh, hey, good afternoon. If you addressed this earlier, I apologize. I haven't heard your whole broadcast. What does home rule, how does that affect state funding, Robin Hood, things of that nature? Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call.
It stays the same.
Yeah. They doesn't.
The funding methods right. would stay the same.
We had a question via email from Jay in Dallas who wanted to know how much this effort will cost us if home rule does not get passed by the voters.
Elections.
Well, Matt. Elections. If they yeah. meet their deadline and get it on the November election, the Dallas County Elections Office told me that it would be about $600,000, and Dallas ISD pays that bill. And there's also other costs that we just don't know what they're going to be.
Once when the district hired an attorney, too.
When the DIC just hired an attorney to help them. But when this commission starts, they can hire an attorney.
They might need staffers to help out, too.
DIC staff would
have
to help
them.
They'll
be like a government
them.
Body.
And so that's time and right. money that DIC is basically donating to this commission, so it could be costly. Some trustees are saying $1 to $2 million. I don't know exactly where they're coming to that calculation, but it could be a lot.
Relatively speaking, and opponents say, wouldn't that money be better spent in the school or for teachers or for supplies? Goes the argument.
Well, to that end, do we know anything about we've heard about possibly extending the school day or the school year as just an idea that people have tossed around. Do we know anything about what this would mean within the classroom for students and the way they study and the way they are taught, or for teachers and the way they are hired and compensated?
You mean like a real education question?
Really? We're only 30 minutes into the program. What do you, we've moved past the red tape.
Well, the students would still have to pass the STAR exam.
Uh-huh.
So you still have to, you know, provide a good curriculum and things like that for them. Now, I think they said that they would have more flexibility with the curriculum. But they still have to take that state mandated test, so you can't get away from that.
You can't change it too much. If you change right. it too much, then they're not prepared for the STAR test.
Right.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go to Nadia in Farmers Branch. Hi, Nadia.
Hi, good afternoon. Can y'all hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. I applied to be on the commission and had a few questions. What kind of resources will the commission have access to in terms of budget, data, statistics, any kind of staff? Do you all have any insight into that yet?
I don't think that's been decided, other than this commission will be a government body. They will follow the open meetings laws, freedom of information laws. That's still to be decided, and hopefully tomorrow when the board meets and decides what process they will use to appoint people to this commission, maybe some of that will be discussed. But obviously, if you have a governmental body, someone's going to have to be there, you know, getting the agenda ready. They'll probably have to take a session or so, you would think, on open meetings laws and the Freedom of Information Act and what is public information. But that really hasn't been decided yet. But it is definitely already been – they're already thinking about that.
I would be stunned if the commission didn't get access to right. DISD employees and data yeah. and budget. There's no way they could right. come up with a charter to possibly overhaul DISD if they don't have all the answers.
Right.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. You can also email think@kera.org. Let's go next on the phone to Bobby in Aledo. Hi, Bobby.
Good afternoon. Yes, ma'am.
Hi. Go right ahead, please.
Just a quick comment. I wanted to hear what you might think with regard to the topic of accountability. The current system of governance within school districts allow the accountability to fall on elected officials, those that are held accountable by the communities of which they serve. Under the proposed form of governance, we now will have appointed commissioners or appointed individuals. So how does that new proposed system of governance, how is that supposed to, well, how does accountability apply with that new form of governance, if I will? I just wanted to hear your comments.
Thanks for your call. Hope we can get some perspective.
Well, that's interesting. When this effort first rolled out, there was a lot of talk about possibly having appointed officers instead of an elected school board. That has since died down, but I will say until that commission gets appointed, they could come and say, hey, we don't want an elected school board. We'd rather have the mayor or someone appoint officers. That has been rather contentious, and folks have backed off from that. But or they could do a mix. They could say, hey, we'll have five elected people and four appointed people. It's just so up in the air. But I would imagine that the governance part of this, that will be definitely looked at because there is concern of moving away from an elected school board.
And there's a few things. The 15-member appointed commission that writes the charter is not your new school board, in case this caller was confusing one with the other. The commission writes the new rules, and that then the commission's job is over.
Well, not unless in the charter the commission decides maybe we want to be the appointed officers, and if the voters approve it in a 25% turnout election, that would happen.
Well, point made.
Yeah. And the commission only lasts a year as well, so it does expire. But the law, which I have, just like Tonnell, right in front of me, it's under governance. It says a home rule school district may adopt and operate under any governance structure. So they can come up with mayoral control, right. Some single member district trustee, some at large. They could do any number of things.
Right.
The phrase that I have not heard thrown around in any of these discussions is evidence-based. Is there any requirement in the law? Has there been any commitment from supporters of this measure to ensure that any changes put in place are in fact backed by research and clinical evidence?
Well, that's what the Texas Education Commissioner, his job is to make sure it does follow the law. This law pretty much lays out what must be in the charter, special education services and things like that. But if it's not in the law, that's going to be up to the Education Commissioner to determine if it runs afoul of the law. And that's why he has his 30 days with the proposed charter to determine that.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, I think, you know, anecdotally, people assume that a longer school year might be better for students. But there's no, if they decide to do that, there's no requirement that they sort of look at research to make sure that that isn't.
No, I mean, if it's in the charter, I mean, you know, it's going to be up to the voters to decide, hey, yeah, we want to do this or not.
But the argument I've heard for moving the school year up earlier, perhaps to the first week of August, charter schools do this, and they do it because it gives them an extra 2 to 3 weeks to prepare for the STAR exam, which every student in the state takes at the same time. So if you start 3 weeks later, you could say, well, we have a disadvantage. Students had more time to prepare at another school, like a charter school, so why don't we try that? So that's the argument they're trying to make.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Karen in Dallas. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I heard Mayor Rawlins, I think on this program, right after Toyota announced they were coming to Plano, talking about not being able to get companies to come to Dallas because of the school district.
Right.
However, the thing that frustrates me about the whole home rule thing is that I think it's a distraction, because the real issue, as far as I can understand, with schools is that we don't have enough middle-class children in schools. And so I would rather see all this effort, time, money put into a campaign to get middle-class people, you know, as a group, okay, we're going to agree, we're going to put our kids in X elementary school, and we're going to be there, and we're going to support the school, which would make the school economically more diverse and probably improve all the schools.
Well, there have been certainly neighborhoods where parents have come together to do just that, but not every neighborhood in the city has a lot of middle-class families.
Right. And that's actually what she said. The mayor, that's what he would like, middle-class families to come back to Dallas ISD, and he thinks the way to do that is to drastically improve the school system. So that's kind of his goal, too, is to get those middle-class families back in. You're right. There have been some neighborhoods like Woodrow Wilson. I mean, choose Woodrow. I mean, they had a big campaign about, you know, trying to get middle class families back. But you're right. It's just not widespread throughout the district.
Some of these, to pick up on a point the caller made, some of the opponents to support our public schools has said, you know, where were these people before? They kind of came out of nowhere and they want to completely perhaps overhaul the school district. Why didn't they come to us over the previous years to say, let's work to improve our neighborhood schools and build a, you know, support like they do in East Dallas for the schools? You know, why weren't they trying to do those kind of things?
What did they say about why now and why this has come to the fore at this moment?
Well, they're sort of rushing it now because of this November deadline, the ballot, because if they don't get it on the November election, the next time they can get this 25% is in 2 years for the presidential.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's why they're rushing it. Their argument is DISD has made some strides over the last previous years under Mike Miles, the most recent being this teacher evaluation plan that was approved last week. But this law, they say, can do so much more. And why don't we think about the potential of what DISD could do, and it could, you know, unlock the district from Austin, oversight from Austin. And so they're saying, you know, this is really a huge boon and benefit to the district if we can get away from this stuff and operate more on our own.
If they don't pass it in November, for whatever reason, there's nothing that says that they couldn't come back again and try again?
It has to get to the November ballot. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't, right, it can come up at another election or another election.
Well, what the law says, for instance, if they go in November, they don't get the minimum turnout. By law, the board has to bring it back in the next uniform election.
Which is May.
And if they don't get it in May, then it's up to the board. It's the board's discretion on whether to bring it back. So they have to, by law, bring it those two times. And then after that, it'll be the discretion of the board whether to bring it back.
We are talking about the home rule proposal for DISD with education reporters Tawnell Hobbs and Matthew Haig of the Dallas Morning News and Bill Zeeble of KERA. If you've got a question, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org, or you can send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Summer registration is now open with courses in art, history, literature, communication, piano, and Portuguese. Registration online at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. As part of KERA's American Graduate Initiative, we're speaking today about the home rule proposal for DISD with education reporters Matthew Haig and Tawnell Hobbs of the Dallas Morning News and Bill Zeeble of KERA. You can join us by calling 1-800-933-5372 or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think. George asks via Twitter, what is the number one reason people in Dallas think home rule is necessary? I suppose among supporters.
You know, good question, because I think the way the petition signature questions were asked runs a gamut. I mean,
right.
And some, you know, do you support our public schools? And so some people who oppose it say the question has been misleading. Or a legitimate question might have been, do you want to see Dallas schools improve, and this home rule approach might speed up those improvements? That's as generic as you can get. And so somebody might sign the signature, sure, I want the schools to get better. But, you know, when I encountered somebody who signed the signature on Election Day in March, he thought he was voting for homeschooling.
Hmm.
And there's still confusion among some of the people I talked to who signed the petition.
But that doesn't negate the petition signature. If a signature's on there and they were given
and
the opportunity
a registered
to read
voter,
it and they're a registered
That's
voter,
right.
it counts.
Yep,
That's
so it counts.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Anne in Irving. Hello, Anne.
Hello.
Hi. Go right ahead, please.
I'm just curious as to what will happen, at least for the time being, if the charter is approved, to current staff, starting with the superintendent, moving all the way down to teachers.
Well, that will be determined in the charter. I mean, that's the thing about the charter. Now, I do know that the school board would stay in place, for instance, if there's a new governance structure. The school board would stay in place until that, you know, those, whether it's elected officials or appointed officials or however they do it, is appointed. But that's the thing. You really, that charter is going to lay out, do we have a superintendent? You know, do they operate it with two superintendents? That charter will lay all that out. So that's really unknown right now.
You know, and what rights and rules apply to teachers? What salaries apply to teachers? Because some of those structures built in through the TEA, the Texas Education Administration Agency, they don't all have to be followed.
You wouldn't have to follow the minimum salary schedule.
And so that's a fear. But, you know, those members of Support Our Public Schools say, why would we want to change the salary and lose good teachers? So we want to be competitive with price and salary and so forth. Right. But those are all open questions.
But there's a new teacher evaluation system that started. That's going to start next year. And it's going to be tied, pay for performance. You get paid based on how well you perform. You know, a commission obviously could come in and say, we don't like that. So you just really don't know until they get the charter together.
It does seem this is a source of anxiety for a lot of teachers.
It is, because yes. One of the things that a home rule charter could get rid of is called Chapter 21 of the Texas Education Code. That outlines a lot of the rights that teachers have, especially when they want to appeal their dismissal. And there's hearings, and it's outlined. It can go all the way up to the commissioner. Charter schools can just dismiss people because they don't have to follow this law. So teachers worry that we could just be let go for no reason, just because perhaps they don't like me. And my only way to challenge it is file a lawsuit. You can appeal it to your boss, up to the school board, up to the TEA commissioner. However, Support Our Public Schools, although they have little influence now, they're saying that should stay. We shouldn't get rid of it. They're trying to calm the teachers down and say that should remain in the way DIST operates.
But, I mean, this is the case, I think, for Bill and me. We can get fired if people just don't like us. I think you probably can as well. Is there a reason that historically teachers have needed this additional layer of protection?
I think I can think of these contracts. I know they have to have these year-long contracts, and maybe that was to so that you didn't have teachers – you know, willy-nilly getting fired throughout the school year, or them just walking out on the job without any kind of repercussion. Mm-hmm. So perhaps that's why that law is in there. But under the charter, you know, they could not have to use that law. And that's a concern. I know you asked earlier about the impact to the classroom. That would be the concern with probably from the teacher's perspective.
But a lot of supporters use the argument that you sort of suggested, which is, you know, everybody else in this world to some degree can be fired because they're at-will employees.
Right.
Why can't teachers be handled the same way? So that has been brought up. And actually, when this Support Our Public Schools rolled out the petition, when Tonnell and I were doing our initial reporting, we found out that the key supporters of this really wanted to get rid of parts of Chapter 21 to make it easier to get rid of teachers and hire new ones if they're just not working out and not have to go through this lengthy, sometimes costly appeal process.
That was something big that they talked about, and they also talked about the governance. They have since backed away from some of that talk, but you know, it is possible to not have to follow that law.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next to Mark in Dallas. Hello, Mark.
Hey, how are y'all?
Great, thank you.
Good. Hey, great show. Thanks for covering this topic.
Sure.
Here's my question. I've noticed every time there is some sort of big initiative in Dallas, the opposing camps always trot out some kind of proxy or some kind of community leader to help sell this to the public. I'd like to get the reporter's perspective of who is going to play a big role in trying to sell home rule to the public? Are there going to be politicians, business leaders, maybe former journalists are going to help persuade the public to buy into home rule? What's your perspective on that?
Well, the mayor is the first big name that comes to mind.
He's been at the forefront of that.
I mean, this has already started. The mayor was the first person, and I was thinking the other day, where is the mayor now? He used to be very vocal about this. He's kind of gone silent about it. He came out. Ron Kirk came out with a statement. Jennifer Staubach-Gates on the city council came out in support of it. Jason Viaba came out in support of it. They had people lined up. And, in fact, they have many more people at one point who are lined up. And I have not seen them come out. Maybe that's for a later time or they've changed their minds. But they have worked behind the scenes to get influential people to try to convince Dallas residents that this is a good thing.
Would there be anything illegal about Support Our Public Schools paying for an endorsement of what they want to do? I'm not suggesting they have.
I don't think I understand.
Just a question.
Ask the question again.
Would they be allowed to pay someone to say, yes, I think this is a great idea, some prominent person, whether it be a celebrity or a local sort of community figure?
I don't think it's illegal. I don't see the benefit, but what do I know?
The only limitations I know to Support Our Public Schools is a 501c4 is technically not supposed to take a political stance.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have to be careful if this thing goes to election that I guess they couldn't endorse one side over the other. They can advocate it for it now. I don't know about paying people and how that works.
Yeah. We have an email here from Rick who asks, what can journalists do or what can be done to find out who the financial backers of this effort are?
Well, since it's a 501c4, they don't have to disclose who their backers are. They could voluntarily do that, which is why we know the one person. The Support of Public Schools says it's the largest financial backer, named John Arnold, a young 30-something former Enron hedge fund guy who's a billionaire who's retired and donates his time and money to causes like this in education reform all over the country. He's the only one because he has a rule that, you know, if I give you money, you have to disclose that, that I gave it to you. And he is the only one who's come forward. And they have refused to name anybody else, which just lends to this skepticism and fear of what these people really want and who's behind it.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones now. This time we have Ed on the line in Duncanville. Hi, Ed.
Hi. President Reagan's Excellence in Education Commission recommended that the pay of teachers be increased dramatically so we get a better teacher corps. Reagan's education department did research that indicated smaller class sizes were the single best thing we could do to improve performance. And so far, all we've heard is that this group wants to fire the teachers, you know, daily floggings if possible until morale improves. And, hey, we don't plan to put any more money in. We don't plan to do anything to shorten the school day. We want to increase the school year.
Well, let's get some response to those statements.
Well, they could modify class size limits. The only thing in law that they cannot change is a elementary school that's low performing. They still have to adhere to the 22 students to one as a teacher. If it's a decent performing or good performing school, they could increase the class sizes. I haven't heard anybody mention that.
And I haven't heard about mass firings of teachers. But there's
the only thing they said that and this was in the beginning, they want to make it easier to get rid of bad teachers, you know, by, you know, maybe doing away with some of that law that protects them. But I haven't heard talk like that in a while. So
let's go back to the phone. We have Terry on the line in Fort Worth. Hey, Terry.
Hey, my question is, where has this worked before? What's the precedent?
Unprecedented, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
First time.
That's why this is the first, and why
no school district has gone this far.
Whatever ground is broken here is new ground. Whatever rules are established here are the new rules because there ain't none.
I mean, no group had even started a petition before. So when this launched in March, they had already gone farther than any other group school district has gone before.
Which in part is why there are many, many questions.
Right.
Do we know much about how much attention other school districts across the state are paying to this effort?
Well, I found out, I think it was Friday, that somebody in Waco ISD, for totally different reasons, saw about DIC and the home rule thing, and he's trying to make a campaign in Waco for home rule, compelled by, I think, different reasons. So I think people are paying attention. And in fact, the attorney that DIC hired, since this law is so vague and they're trying to figure out how to navigate it, he wants to make sure that they do everything that's completely above board. So if this ever happens again, they'll look at DIC as the precedent, and they know that people are watching.
Once the 15-member commission has been established, do you feel as reporters that you will have sufficient access to get a sense from the members of that commission what they're thinking about and what they might or might not wish to do?
Well, we'll certainly try.
That's a good question. There's 15 of them, hopefully.
Yeah.
Some of them will be media friendly. But that's a good question. We just don't know who they are yet. And I imagine once they announce them, we'll, you know.
The meetings will be public, and so will the documents they get. So to some extent, we'll know what they want. I hope that they are forthcoming and speaking out about what they would like to see.
How lengthy is this charter? I mean, I think about this August 18th deadline if they want it on the November ballot. And I'm wondering, is this something that runs to hundreds of pages? Is it 6 pages of bullet points? How does that all work?
You know, that's interesting because in the law, there are certain you have to note certain laws that must be followed in the charter. And I'm looking at the list now, and that list is probably a page and a half. So they could come and say, okay, we will follow the law establishing what a criminal offense is, and we will follow the state law establishing that. And then they could actually, and that's probably a page and a half.
So that's copy and paste sort of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's right here in the law. You could kind of just kind of put it right in the charter. And then from then they could go into the charter. I mean, she just don't know how long.
In fact,
it could be really long or it could be really short.
Mm-hmm. There's one group that has come out with a proposed charter so far, headed by a lawyer named Mark Melton, who says he's not associated with any other group. They have come out with a charter. It's 7 pages long. It basically says everything under the Texas Education Code, DIC will follow, except for 3 things, which is we can recall trustees, they'll have term limits, and the school year can start earlier.
And those are, to be clear, those are suggestions that he'll make available to the board,
right,
to the commission, but not anything that the commission is necessarily even required to
read.
They're
not bound to
that. Correct. They could just ignore it.
We have about 30 seconds left. Does anyone have a question that they are still trying to chase down that so far you have not been able to get an answer to beyond what we've already talked about?
Yeah, I want to know who the commission members are going
to be. And then we're waiting to see what the process is going to be because, you know, there's 9 trustees and they will have direct power to appoint the 11 members. So there's going to be, you know, if each 9 trustee got their member, you still have 2 left over. So you have to determine how that's going to happen. So we're interested to see what kind of process they work out. And they're expected to approve a process at tomorrow's meeting at 5:30.
And as of yesterday afternoon, they had 180 applications. So I'm sure that's over 200 by now.
Right.
Matthew Haig and Tonnell Hobbs report and blog on education for the Dallas Morning News. Bill Zeeble covers education for KERA. All 3 were here as part of KERA's American Graduate Initiative. It's been wonderful to have you all in. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect actually produced the show today with help on the phones from Christina Ulsh. Our executive producer is Jeff Whittington. You can contact the show via email at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.